I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our community conversation about domestic violence. We're going to talk about some new efforts to promote domestic violence awareness, particularly among young people. My guests are Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs, Lindsay Hill Staywick, Maria De Leon, member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Post-Secondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. Please join the conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to continue our community conversation about domestic violence today on No Limits. If you want to join and be part of this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs, Lindsay Hill Staywick, Maria De Leon, member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Post-Secondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here in the studio. So let's talk a bit about, and I should say to our listeners, this is in some ways a complement to the conversation we had about Josina Michelle, with Josina Michelle last week, about her activism regarding the issue of domestic violence. We're going to bring the focus a little closer to home. She operates on a global level. All of these folks operate in the streets all around you. So they're the ones who are paying attention to Indiana and Indianapolis. So let's talk about the scope of this. I'll start with you, Lindsay. I mean, how many people in Indiana do we estimate are affected by the issue of domestic violence?
According to the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that was done in 2015, I believe, that was done through the CDC, about 10% of high school students report being physically assaulted by their intimate partner, current or former. Indiana ranks third out of 30 states for the highest rate of teen dating sexual violence. Again, that was data put out by the YRBS. Nationally, one in three teenagers experience some form of dating abuse, whether that's emotional, physical, through social media, sexual, stalking. It's an issue that we know when we're in the classrooms teaching, young people are talking about it and want to talk about it and disclose their experiences. So we definitely know that it's happening.
Flora, since you are in the schools, How large an issue is this, and how does it affect the way schools have to conduct themselves?
It is an issue that we are all concerned with. It is a large issue across the nation as well as the state of Indiana. And one of the things that we're looking at as Indianapolis Public Schools is how can we impact our students so that they can be academically successful? Because we know that students who are involved in abuse are impacted by the violence of sex, the violence of being stalked, all of those major contributors, and then it impacts their education. So academically, we want students to be successful, but we know we must address the social and emotional aspect as well.
And Maria, in terms of you, not to out anyone as being slightly older or anything like that. You, though, seem to be the more junior member of the panel here. Is this something that is a real and present concern among young people?
I would say yes. So when I started the No More Club at Chris Bozadic's High School and then became a part of the Domestic Violence Youth Network. We had a lot of students come forward and share their stories, and or we had other students who were a part of the club share how they would see it going around the school. So that basically told us that, yes, it is a problem that is going on within our own high school.
So, Lindsay, and I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this, because the numbers, this is not an area that Indiana does well in. It's also the numbers, frankly, for teen sexual assault are appalling. As well, we've done shows on that with Christina Hale and others. There's no delicate way to ask this question. What is it about Indiana that seems to, if not encourage, at least condone this kind of behavior? I'll start with you, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that.
I want to start first by saying that IPS is doing an amazing job of allowing us in their classrooms and to talk about these difficult topics. I think that Indiana being a more conservative state, we tend to shy away from teaching about sex, about relationships, about dating, and we're more focused on the academics. You know, we live in an abstinence-based sex education state. So if we're not even talking about what a healthy relationship looks like or what consent is and what that looks like, because we're only saying just don't do it, don't be in relationships, don't have sex, then I think that as young people engage in relationships, because we know that they will, are confused and not sure how to navigate those relationships or what to do or where to ask for help. A lot of times our young people, especially in our city, they're not necessarily getting those messages at home. And so because maybe at home they're experiencing domestic violence, or in their neighborhood there's a lot of violence, and so they're not getting that role modeled for them. And so the school's the next best place to get it. And so I think, you know, that's kind of my opinion on why there might be an issue.
Maria, your thoughts? You live as part of, you know, part of that dynamic, not necessarily the domestic violence, but in the environment where, you know, 1 in 10 kids has experienced it at the hands of an intimate partner. What do you think? Why do you think Indiana deals with this has so much more difficult a time with this than other states?
So I think education, of course, is the way to help raise awareness about this issue. And so I think because Indiana doesn't have, you know, laws that make districts teach about this issue, I think that's one of the big problems. So I think now with implementing this policy, I feel like we will be able to reach out to more students. And I think that's one of the biggest steps that Indiana should start to take, is to implement this policy to all the districts of Indiana.
Flora, before I ask you the same question, because we probably ought to talk about what the policy is, and then we'll...
Well, when we look at Indianapolis Public Schools, and becoming a partner with DVN has been an amazing journey. The board has determined that a safe and civil environment in school is necessary for students to learn and to achieve the high academic standards. All members of the school community, including administrators, faculty, staff, parents, and students, will be engaged in the district's work to establish a respectful school climate where all members can safely learn and thrive. Specifically, the district seeks to place the primary responsibility for preventing abusive behavior on members of the school staff. That is our first step, implementing prevention strategies to promote a safe and respectful school climate. We also want to reinforce the respectful school climate by holding students engaging in abusive behavior accountable for the behavior, and also enable disclosure among students experiencing abuse so that the school can take steps to eliminate abuse where it is happening and to remedy the effects of abuse within the Indianapolis Public School District.
So I'm going to ask you the question I asked the two of them. What about Indiana? And then we're going to come back to the specifics. of that?
I must be in agreement with my colleagues here that Indiana is a more conservative state, and the teaching of this subject has not been a priority. So we have to begin to have courageous conversations, and these conversations must take place at the schoolhouse, at the church house, at the home, within the community. All of our stakeholders must be involved in communicating effectively about issues that are plaguing our youth and our society. So when we look at our social media, it's enticing. So when students are enticed, they want to participate. And when they participate, often they are abused and hurt because they do not have the core knowledge.
So bringing it back then to this policy, and I should invite our listeners also to join this conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm going to stay with you, Flora, for a second. What led to the formulation of this policy? Why did the board and obviously the administration, the teachers, the IPS community decide this is something we need to deal with?
I think that the reaching out from DVN to Indianapolis Public Schools and saying, we would like to share, we would like to come into your environment and learn from you. What are some of your students experiencing? DVN came in and they did some surveys with our counselors, our social workers, student body, and asked the questions, what is happening in your personal lives? What does dating look like for you? What is a healthy relationship? And when many of these questions couldn't be answered, we knew that we needed to do something based on the lack of knowledge that our students and our staff shared during the survey. So I think that was the catalyst that really just DVN reached out and said, can we partner? Can we make a difference? And so we began immediately to start seeking a way that we could come together as a team and make this happen.
Lindsay, what prompted DVN to work out, to reach out to IPS in the fashion that it did?
I've been at DVN for the past 4 years, and I was hired to grow our youth program. And so we've been in IPS schools here and there when I would create relationships with teachers or social workers or guidance counselors. Well, really, it was Ms. Flora Jones and Maria who I remember Maria was sitting in my house. We had just done an interview with The Atlantic, and she said, what can we do to change this? What can we do to educate, you know, my peers about this topic? And I said, well, I think we should probably start, you know, at the school policy level. And Maria is really the one that took it from there. And Ms. Flora and I and other staff at IPS just really supported her and lifted her up during that journey. She's the one that spoke before the school board 3 times, I believe, mm-hmm. To talk about this policy and to talk about why it's important. And so Maria is really the one that got it going. And it's just been a wonderful and important journey.
Maria, then I think that's your cue. What prompted you to think this was the way, and this was the way to approach this problem?
So for the past 4 years, or for throughout high school, all we did, you know, was raise awareness and connected with the community. But I started to think that maybe putting this into action would make a bigger difference for the students, and I think that's why. That's what motivated me more, was making a difference in at least one student within the district of IPS.
What led you to believe that the other efforts weren't having the kind of impact that you wanted them to have?
I mean, we were raising awareness, and it was making a difference in people, the students coming forward and sharing their stories and the students feeling more empowered. But I know personally as a student, you know, I didn't know what Title IX was, or before I was a part of the No More Club or the Domestic Violence Youth Network, I didn't know what the difference between physical and emotional abuse. So it was making a difference in students, but I just wanted to take it further down. I wanted to actually put it into action.
And we're going to talk more about this and about really also why domestic violence has proved to be such a difficult nut to crack through not just the years, but the generations, the centuries. If you are just joining us, we are talking about domestic violence. We're continuing our community conversation about it, particularly about domestic violence among the young. My guests are Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, Maria De Leon, member of DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Postsecondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about domestic violence, continuing our ongoing community conversation about this important subject. We're focusing particularly on domestic violence among the young. My guests are Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, Maria De Leon, member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Postsecondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Maria, I want to come back to you real quickly and ask you. First, I want you to tell me what the No More Club is, because you've made reference to that a couple of times. And then talk to me a little bit about the journey that led you to the Domestic Violence Network, about what prompted you, because it sounds like you throw a tremendous amount of time at this and energy. What brought you to it?
So the No More Club was a group of students at Crispus Attucks High School who raised awareness about domestic violence and teen dating abuse and sexual assault. And we just did a lot of raising awareness, a lot of planning events throughout the school so that students could become educated about the issue. And then after the first year of being a part of the No More Club, I was invited by Lindsay Staywick to be a part of the Domestic Violence Youth Network. And I, of course, accepted to be a part of the network because I really wanted to continue to raise awareness about this issue and myself and educate myself about this issue.
What spoke to you about this issue in particular?
It was one of the first social issues that I started to learn about and that motivated me to become more involved within my community. And what just really surprised me was that it can happen to anyone, to even students. It can happen to myself. And yeah, it could just happen to anyone, no matter gender, sexual orientation, religion, or age.
And Lindsay, why did you reach out to Maria then?
When I first started at DVN, I did a training for IPS social workers and guidance counselors, and there was a really dedicated social worker. Her name was Ms. Kim Baker, and she asked me to come to Attucks to start this club. And so she is the one that originally chose the young people that would be in the club, and then from there is when I just fostered that relationship with Maria, and she was a go-getter. She took initiative. She wanted to be a part of all of it, and I saw that. And so any opportunity that came my way that I knew she could be involved in, I asked her, and she always said yes. And so she's been a great ally and a great support in this program.
Okay, I want to broaden this a little bit now. And I mentioned before, when I was a newspaper reporter, I did quite a bit of reporting on the issue of domestic violence, and it has been a concern for, well, 50 years, I think, prior to that, it was very difficult to get people even to acknowledge or talk about it. It's now out there, and we have a much more kind of complete profile. We have better numbers, although I think, does everyone think that the numbers that we cited from the CDC are precise, or are they low?
Low.
Low, yeah. There's more of it. There's more of it out there. While I hear again and again that education is the solution, I can't think of too many schools or churches, or places like that that are actively saying, oh, no, it's okay to beat up someone you love. But people do it, and do it with what is a distressing regularity. What is it about this approach that we think will make a dent? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Lindsay, actually, even though we focus a lot more attention on it now, there are some indicators the problem's gotten worse in recent years. And then I'm going to go to Flora.
Okay. I think Ms. Flora will help me with this. I think that it's not just about education, and it's not just about telling people about warning signs or that we have a resource in our community. It's about making people actually feel that what we're telling them is going to be helpful and supportive. And it's also, being real in the classroom and saying, this isn't it. Young people love for you to just be real with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so being authentic and real when you're having these conversations is really important. It's also important to talk about those soft skills that maybe they didn't learn as young people in elementary or even before that. So kindness, empathy, compassion. So something that IPS is doing is they are implementing a social and emotional learning curriculum in their elementary schools. And our hope is that when we talk to middle and high school students, that now we have a better understanding of what they're learning in that curriculum. And then we try to reinforce that in middle and high school while also talking about warning signs, red flags. But having a healthy and safe relationship is way more than just learning warning signs. And so that's something that DVN is definitely looking at as we partner with IPS and other young people around the city. What can we do besides just give warning signs to make a difference in how you engage in relationships?
Flora, how will this policy attack what has been, an often intractable problem?
I believe that the part of the issue is generational abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we have families who have been involved in abuse generation after generation, so it is the norm. And until someone identifies this as not being normal,
mm-hmm.
we continue that cycle. So we have to break that cycle in order for our students to recognize, I can do something different. I have the opportunity. Lindsay mentioned that we have provided every elementary school in IPS. We have equipped them with a social-emotional learning curriculum, which is called Second Step. We are starting at pre-K and moving forward because we know that our students come to school with trauma. They come to school not understanding some of the social norms.
Mm-hmm.
So we're educating our students, and not only our students, but we've decided that our parents must be an part of this educational process. So we're working with sending home lessons to parents. This is what we're teaching your child so that they can reinforce those skills, those soft skills, so that they can become hard skills. And then in the middle school, we're doing the same thing with a higher level of the Second Step curriculum. We were fortunate to be the recipients of the Eli Lilly counseling grant, which was over $2.8 million, which we have invested in our students' social-emotional capacities. At the high school level, we have implemented 4 future centers, and those future centers are the hub for success, and they're also that safety zone where students can go and share with the licensed counselor who is the coordinator information that's pertaining to maybe their own abuse or what they have identified in others as signs of abuse. So we're working constantly to improve the knowledge, not just of our children, but of our community and our parents. So we're working desperately because we know there's a need and we have to break the cycle of abuse.
And that, you know, to put that in context, I mean, the studies show, obviously, that children who grow up in homes where domestic violence, domestic abuse features in it are far more likely to be either perpetrators or victims of domestic abuse themselves, sometimes both. So attacking this cycle is problematic. I want to talk a little bit about the therapeutic value. You know, it is something we do talk about now. And we talk about these issues. What benefits are gained from having these conversations, both the immediate ones and the long-lasting ones? I'll start with Lindsay because she made the mistake of making eye contact. It's like a classroom. If you don't want the teacher to call on you, Lindsay, you look down at your shoes.
Well, then will you repeat the question? Because I was.
Yeah. What are the benefits of having these courageous conversations, as Flora said,
both
immediate and long term?
I'll share a quick story. When we were, when we had the No More Club, sorry, I was searching for a word, at Addicts, we had one young woman who spoke to the media. They were doing a story about the No More Club because they're doing such amazing things. And one thing that she said to the media was that, I just want someone to ask me. I want someone to talk to me about my relationships and ask me about them. How are they doing? Do you need help? Instead of adults, you know, either not bringing it up or exaggerating the situation. And so I think there is great gain in having these courageous conversations with young people because we know that they want to have them. And sometimes they don't have that person at home that will talk to them about it. And so they need those kind, caring, and consistent adults in their life, no matter where it is. It might be a church, it might be a coach, it might be a teacher. Having somebody that brings those things up, because relationships are everything. Whether they're dating or friendships, they are everything, and they mean a lot to young people. And so there's everything to gain when you have these conversations.
What gains from the conversations do you see, Maria?
I think that when we start talking more about domestic violence and teen dating abuse, even within our own group of friends, we start to have more intellectual like conversations about this issue, and also we just start to get comfortable with each other, and we start to discuss about how we can even help each other. And I think like Lindsay said, like these relationships with your friends or if it's an intimate relationship or relationships with adults, like they're very important because it makes us start to feel comfortable to discuss about this issue.
Do you find that that young people, that students are open to or eager to have those kinds of conversations? Because a lot of them can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
Maria?
Yes. I mean, at first, if you don't see that the adults want to conversate with you about the topic, then you don't feel comfortable wanting to bring up the topic with adults, just with the people who are around the same age as you. And so I think that's where we lose that trust and that connection with the people who can provide us with the resources and the guidance.
Are students willing to talk with you? I mean, you're one of their peers, basically. Mm-hmm. Are they willing to talk with you? Are they more open? And do you have those kinds of discussions? And what are they like?
Yes. You know, when I personally share that I'm an advocate for domestic violence, even right now that I'm in college and I tell my friends about the things that I've been doing in high school, they start to personally share their own stories. And so, yeah, definitely. People feel comfortable when they know that I'm an advocate about it or that I care about the issue.
Do they share their personal experiences where they're saying, okay, this is what happened?
Yes.
To me, some of that can be kind of tough to hear, I would think, having done my own reporting on that. How do you make sure that you take care of yourself in that process?
Well, I definitely tell them that I'm here for them and that I can connect them with the resources or in general that I'm here to just listen if they want to continue discussing about their experience. But I mean, I'm just really grateful. I start to think about how I was raising awareness throughout high school and how I know that that at least made a difference in one student. And also that it just motivates me even more to continue putting things into action within our community and especially within the IPS district and like the high schools and middle schools and elementary schools.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about domestic violence today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Flora, how long has this new policy been in effect?
September 27th of this year.
So it's not quite 2 weeks old then, right?
Absolutely.
So a little too soon to start seeing any results or have any data from it. How are you going to measure success with this policy?
Part of our measurement is going to be through tracking our students who are coming into our future centers and reporting. And our coordinators there are the go-to person, and they will share that with our Title IX coordinator. Our Title IX coordinator will be the one that will also be tracking. So we'll be tracking all reporting because it's important that we understand the needs, and we're going to learn to identify what are some of the top abuse that we're seeing from our students. So that tracking mechanism and that data is going to be critical to us improving each year. But it starts at that future center at the high school level. At the middle school and at the elementary, we're looking at our social workers and our counselors who are going to be that key person or assistant principal, whoever has been identified as that champion for this policy. That person will be that safe person. But the building of relationships is going to be critical because as the students are free to talk with Maria, we also want them to have the ability to be able to go to adults and have those conversations. Many of our high schools and middle schools have advisory homerooms where those teachers are becoming those mentors. And when you have a mentor, someone that you feel comfortable, you see them on a daily basis, you'll go to them and have those conversations, and then they will immediately know what the procedures are, and then the procedures are followed throughout elementary, middle, and high school so that we are tracking and making a difference with the data that we receive.
Lindsay, I'm asking this question out of ignorance. I work in an academic environment myself, but I would think it's somewhat different for someone to talk to Maria than Flora, because on a lot of these issues, once Flora is informed about this, she's got legal responsibilities and duties to report to appropriate authorities. Does Maria have the same duties?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
So students can approach her a little more easily knowing, okay, this thing could not get out of hand that quickly. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, not all forms of dating abuse are at the level of criminal or child abuse or neglect. It could be, hey, this is happening. My partner reads all my texts. You know, what's going on with that? And Maria may advise, like, that doesn't sound like it's going in a healthy direction. Here's a place that you can go to learn more. But Maria also knows, because she's 18, that she does have a duty to report child abuse and neglect.
And we will continue this on the other side. We're talking about domestic violence today on No Limits. My guests are Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs, Lindsay Hill-Staywick, Maria De Leon, member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Post-Secondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're continuing our community conversation about domestic violence, particularly among young people, today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Lindsay Hill-Staywick. She is the Domestic Violence Network's Director of Programs, Maria De Leon, who is a member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Post-Secondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools. So I want to talk about what seems to be the essential challenge with a lot of this, and that is just getting people to talk about it. There seems to be a real stigma still, even though there have been a lot of efforts to try to drag this out from below the surface and get people to confront it directly. What is it that makes people so reluctant to talk about these issues? Flora, I'll start with you.
The first thing that popped in my head when you said that was everyone's looking for love. And when they are looking for love, it may be in the form of abuse, but if that person is paying attention, sometimes that overshadows any abuse. And so they're being loved. So you hear that often, and you hear students say, well, I'm in love, or he loves me. But if he's treating you this way, is that a sign of love? And the students will say, well, yeah, because I see that happen at home. That's not all situations, but that's some. So we have to start to change what a healthy relationship looks like. And that's one of the things that I know part of the curriculum that Lindsay brings to the table is that this is what a healthy relationship looks like. This is how it should sound. This is how it should feel. And if students begin to see that, not only will they acknowledge that something is wrong, they'll seek out help. And then having all of those resources available, that is critical, because oftentimes we say, well, this isn't a good thing for you, but we don't help them find the right things. So having those resources that are available, sharing that information, but just building those strong relationships with students and then reporting, because every staff person within IPS is responsible and required and mandated to report signs of abuse. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that students are aware of that.
And it's not just IPS, it's all
exactly.
Educational institutions.
Across this, yes.
Yeah.
And so we just want to make sure that students understand this is not the norm. And that's just our concern, that they've become comfortable with this behavior.
Lindsay, why are these conversations so tough?
I don't recommend it, but if you look at comments, so social media is a big part of everybody's life. It's especially big with young people. But if you look at the comments or the way people talk about domestic violence or sexual violence in the media or on social media, it doesn't promote disclosure. Mm-hmm. It's very victim blaming. Well, what were they wearing? They shouldn't be out at night. They should always have a buddy. What did they do to deserve the abuse? Did they make the other person mad? Why didn't they report sooner? And it's the type of issue that people don't believe right away. You know, if I told you that someone came to my house and robbed me, you'd believe that in a second. If I told you that I was sexually assaulted or an unhealthy, violent relationship, you would ask me a million questions about it instead of just being open and open-minded and open to listening to me about it. And I've heard that from so many survivors and victims of violence who have come forward there's always questions about the abuse that aren't helpful or supportive.
And we've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, wanted to remain anonymous, that is sort of the elephant in the room right now. You sort of alluded to it in your comments, and I want to deal with it. We've had, obviously, a national and very high-profile conversation about teen sexual assault. Mm-hmm. You know, it was part of the nomination battle over now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. What is the impact of that likely to be? Because, you know, there's no other way to say it. Mm-hmm. We have the President of the United States and a lot of senators saying they just didn't believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason they didn't believe it was that she waited mm-hmm. too many years to report it. Mm-hmm. What's likely to be the impact of that, the fallout? I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that, but I'll start with Lindsay.
Oh, it's very discouraging because I know that a lot of young people, whether, you know, they're on social media or not, are seeing this. And it's, you know, it's frustrating because they look to these people for guidance. They think, you know, they're in the highest position in the land. They're kind of, you know, they are who we should look to. And I think it scares them to want to report. I think it doesn't support anybody who is struggling right now with, oh my gosh, should I disclose? Who should I disclose to? Are they going to believe me? You shouldn't feel that someone's not going to believe you when you've been hurt. You should know that the person that you go to is going to support you, is going to get you the services that you need. And maybe you don't want services. Maybe you just want to talk. And so I think with what's going on, and this was happening before this mm-hmm. this happened. This was all over social media. People do not believe. And I think that, you know, the biggest advice I can give is start by believing. Just start by believing and keep that door open for that person to explain what happened and be there for that person.
Maria.
Again, I would also say that it's kind of frustrating because also since now I'm in college and, you know, sexual assault is a big issue on college campuses. And so, yeah, it is very scary to see that the biggest leaders in our country aren't really supporting and instead not empowering women to speak out about this issue. But that's why I'm just, that's why I've personally, you know, I want to continue raising awareness about this issue and putting it more into action because I think that's what we need to do and to continue to empower everyone, you know, including not just women, but men as well, that that they can speak out.
Flora.
I agree with both of my colleagues, but I also want to look at it from the perspective of a lot of our high-profile stars, political figures, have been singled out for sexual harassment, abuse, etc. And we look at many who say, well, I didn't want to tell for 10, 15, 20 years. But I'm hoping that this last scenario will cause people to stand up and stand out, speak up and speak out. I'm hoping that they will see that the timeline that it took for this female to report this male mm-hmm. is not being tolerated. Mm-hmm. I want them to say, I'm going to speak up now. Because I'm not going to wait 15 years. I'm going to speak up today and say what happened to me. And I'm going to stand firm on my conviction. So I'm hoping that this whole education platform is going to take over this doubt that our society has created when someone reports. Early reporting is critical. Let's start reporting. Let's not wait. Because we see the impact that waiting has, not just on a city, on a state, but on a nation. So I believe that this scenario is going to cause people to say, I'm no longer going to sit in silence. I'm not going to wait 15, 20 years. I'm going to speak up today.
We are talking about domestic violence on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener has done and track us down on Twitter at wfyi. This listener writes, do you see other Indianapolis school districts, such as Lawrence Township, adopting a similar policy? Is DVN working with other school districts? Lindsay.
Yes, so we provide education to Central Indiana school districts, and so we've been in Pike Township. We haven't been in Lawrence Township. We've been in Perry Township, Warren, Wayne. So we've been all over. We did focus on IPS, and Maria wanted to get this policy off the ground, and so we supported her in that journey. But big picture and a dream of mine is to get other districts, other townships on board with creating a proactive prevention and response policy, just like IPS did. And it's modeled after Heather's Law, which was put into place to say that Indiana school districts can provide healthy relationship education, and the IDOE is going to put information on their website. They can adopt a policy, and they put model policy on there. And so now IPS took what Heather's Law, you know, put into place through the IDOE, and now is putting it into action. And so, and I think they're one of the first districts in Indiana to do so. And so I would love to work with other townships to implement the same thing.
What are your hopes for this policy? And it's a variation of the same question.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Flora how they were going to measure success. What do you hope will come out of this? And obviously, you know, we live in an administrative bureaucratic world, so some of the measurements have to be tangible. But in this program, you're also allowed to talk about the intangible things,
dream.
The things that, well, the things that are hard to measure.
Yeah. I have a couple hopes. One hope is that I hope that young people within the district and other districts in Indy see what Maria did as a student and inspire them to do the same, so to take action. Another hope is that because of this policy and because it's going to be promoted and talked about, that young people realize that my school is taking this seriously. And I know that I am safe here, that I am supported here, and that if I have an issue, I know that I can talk about it. I want young people to know that they have someone within their school, within their classroom, that will listen to them and that will believe them and help them.
Maria, since this was in some ways your brainchild, same question.
Well, I hope that students will become educated about the issue. I hope that they will become empowered through the education, and for victims to speak out, or friends to be able to help their peers. And then, again, that kind of ties into what I'm about to say. And I hope that students become, that they're enabled to empower their own peers, within the community and the school.
And Flora, I know when I asked you this question earlier, you pretty much gave me the IPS take on this, what the official policy is and what the official process is for measuring how it's going to work. I'd like you to just speak to it as an individual now. I mean, obviously you care about young people. You wouldn't be doing what you're doing, and you wouldn't talk about them the way you do. What is it you will hope, just as a human being, will come out of this policy?
My hope is that Indiana will not lead the charge for domestic sexual harassment and violence, that our numbers will go down, that students, parents, families will become educated and understand that there's a better way to living, that there are healthy relationships, and that there are tools available for them to learn how to maneuver through this thing called life. As a licensed counselor and a licensed administrator, I've seen from both sides. And I've talked with parents. I've talked with students who have been victims. I've talked to abusers who have been in a situation where they didn't know any other way to deal with a relationship. So when I talk from a personal perspective, it hits really hard because I've seen the demise of sexual violence in students and in families and how total families are destroyed because of it. So the key is education. The key is becoming transparent. The key is changing the culture and the climate of the world in which we live, the school in which we teach students, changing, building relationships with community stakeholders like DVN, empowering young people like Maria to step out and become a role model, to become the person that she is, the leader. This is what my hope is, that this will happen, and it will happen not just today, but every single day. And if we can change the lives of one student at a time, we're making a difference.
So I'm guessing probably that there may be some people who are listening to this program who, just based on my own reporting with this, are going to have some questions. I don't know whether what I'm experiencing rises to the level of domestic abuse, the kind of soft things in that case, and I don't want to necessarily as a first step dial 911. We would be remiss if we didn't use some of this time, Lindsay, to talk about where they might be able to call and have the kinds of conversations.
Of course. 211 here in the city, they can direct you to any social service that you may need, and they are specifically trained in domestic violence and talking to people experiencing it. The Julian Center is our local shelter, and they also provide outreach services. So even if you don't need shelter but you need to speak to an advocate, you can call the Julian Center. And then Families First is another great organization that provides outreach, domestic violence, and sexual violence advocates.
And is there a URL or someplace that has a useful sort of this qualifies as domestic abuse?
Sure, you can go to any of the national domestic violence websites. You can go to www.dvnconnect.org and also loveisrespect.org. That's geared more towards young people, but it has amazing resources and information about violence and relationships.
And that will have to be the last word. It goes quickly, doesn't it? I'd like to thank my guests, Lindsay Hill Stawick. She is Domestic Violence Network Director of Programs. Maria De Leon, member of the DVN's Youth Network, and Flora Jones, Director of Post-Secondary Readiness at the Indianapolis Public Schools, for a lively conversation. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
It's been good to have you here. I'd like to thank our listeners and invite everybody to come back when we're going to change pace on Thursday and throw a birthday party for the 200th anniversary of the publication of the novel Frankenstein. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.